evening, and welcome to the local news. Today is Monday, June 9th. I'm Jordan Pangelinan, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office conducts a sex offender compliance sweep. The House Committee on Rules reviews rescission proposals that could affect public media funding. And childcare issues highlighted at Eureka City Council. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. KMUD spoke to Doug Boucher, a meteorologist for the National Weather Service, to give you the weather report for this week's heat wave.
Okay, yeah, we're experiencing a 100 to 105 degree heat across mostly northeastern Trinity, Willow Creek, up towards Hoopa, and then into Orleans, and then mostly across the Trinity counties where we're seeing the 100 degree heat. Good news is that the heat was forecast to diminish as we through the week. We are still forecasting high temperatures to be in the low to mid 90s. 94 at Orleans, 98 at Willow Creek, and then Garberville is going to be much cooler with a high of only about 88 tomorrow. And then, like as we head into Wednesday and Thursday, yeah, temperatures should start to decrease. Into the low to mid, into the 80s. We're looking at 85 at Orleans, 89 at Willow Creek, and then 83 at Garberville. And then temperatures should even trend down lower as we head into the latter portion of the week. And we think temperatures will stay right around or just slightly below normal, which is about, the low to mid 80s, toward the latter portion of the week and into the weekend. So yeah, good upshot is the heat will start to diminish, and we'll see some more afternoon westerly and northwesterly breezes in the afternoon as well. We are forecasting thunderstorms today over mostly Trinity County. There's some lightning activity ongoing right now, and then we're forecasting kind of a repeat, but confined mostly to northeastern Trinity there on Tuesday again. And then that activity should diminish. So upshot is, it's hot today with 100 to 105 degrees across Trinity County and northeastern Humboldt. And then temperatures diminishing through the week. And even overnight lows should start to cool down as well. So there's relief on the way.
Here is how you can take caution this week.
Yeah, I mean, we're on the downside of this heat wave, and even though temperatures are going to cool down into the low to mid 80s, there's still a low risk for heat, heat risk for especially those that are really sensitive to heat. And then also just be careful if you're going to go out and play on the rivers, because the water is still pretty cold and swift moving. So we just urge people to be vigilant of if you're going to go play on the rivers and whatnot. Even though temperatures are going to cool down, as we get into the end of the week, low to mid 80s, we're still forecasting a low heat risk, and so that could still have an impact on, the elderly and people that are super sensitive to heat. And then just being out in the sun, I mean, you can get sunburned. be careful on the rivers.
President Donald Trump has endorsed the arrest of California Governor Gavin Newsom. This is coming after statements from Newsom regarding the ongoing mass ICE raids happening in LA and the alleged deployment of the National Guard. Governor Newsom issued this statement on June 7th following the federal government's intent to deploy the California National Guard. In quote, "The federal government is moving to take over the California National Guard and deploy 2,000 soldiers. That move is purposefully inflammatory and will only escalate tensions. LA authorities are able to access law enforcement assistance at a moment's notice. We are in close coordination with the city and county, and there is currently no unmet need. The Guard has been admirably serving LA throughout recovery. This is the wrong mission and will erode public trust." End quote. Yesterday, Gavin Newsom said this in a statement on MSNBC Breaking News Report in a response to Trump's arrest on Newsom if he decides to get involved with the anti-ICE protests.
"Home in the Borders are said to me yesterday, he did not rule out literally arresting you,
yep.
nor Mayor Bass, yep. if you interfere in his words. He said you hadn't yet.
He's a tough guy. Why doesn't he do that? He knows where to find me. But you know what? Lay your hands off four-year-old girls that are trying to get educated. Lay your hands off these poor people who are just trying to live their lives, man. Trying to live their lives, paying their taxes, been here 10 years. The fear, the horror, the hell is this guy? Come after me, arrest me. Let's just get it over with. Tough guy. You know, I don't give a damn, but I care about my community. I care about this community. The hell are they doing? These guys need to grow up. They need to stop. And we need to push back. And I'm sorry to be so clear, but that kind of bloviating is exhausting. So, Tom, arrest me. Let's go.
Between May 19th through the 30th, the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office, in collaboration with the local and state agencies, conducted a sex offender registration compliance sweep across Humboldt County. The goal was to verify that registered sex offenders were adhering to California Penal Code 290, which mandates in-person registration and reporting of any charges. Key results showed total registered offenders were 375, and out of those 375, 46 registered as transient, 317 were found in compliance, 23 were suspected to be out of compliance, 28 were unreachable, 2 were already incarcerated, 4 were deceased, and 7 arrests were made, with further investigations and arrest warrants expected. The sweep, part of the Sexual Assault Felony Enforcement Team initiative, aims to reduce sexual violence through proactive monitoring and enforcement. The Humboldt County Sheriff's Office would also encourage members of the public to research Megan's Law, which is a set of state and federal laws that require sex offenders to register with law enforcement and make information about the registration and whereabouts public. The primary purpose is to protect communities, particularly children, from potential harm by sexual offenders. This is achieved by providing the public with access to information about registered sex offenders and allowing law enforcement to notify communities about their presence. Megan's Law website can be accessed at www.meganslaw.ca.gov. Anyone with questions or possible concerns about a sex registrant should contact their local law enforcement agency. For more information regarding the sex offender registration compliance sweep, contact investigator Jen Taylor at 707-268-3642. Additional information on Megan's Law and ways to protect yourself and your family can be accessed at www.meganslaw.ca.gov/education/protecting-yourself. On May 30th, 2025, the Humboldt County Probation Department received information regarding the whereabouts of Decker Contreras, age 21, who had a warrant out for his arrest. Officers from the HCPD, along with the Humboldt Area California Highway Patrol, responded to the 2500 block of Glendale Avenue in Blue Lake, where they contacted and arrested Contreras. A probation search of the residence and a related vehicle was conducted. The search revealed an unregistered revolver, 5 rounds of live .357 caliber ammunition, and what appeared to be large quantities of narcotics. Due to the presence of narcotics, the HCPD contacted the Humboldt County Drug Task Force to assist. Upon arrival, agents located 5 grams of methamphetamine, 37 grams of MDMA, 184.9 grams of cocaine, 557 grams of marijuana, and evidence related to the sales of controlled substances. Contreras was transported to the Humboldt County Correctional Facility and booked without incident. Anyone with information related to this investigation or other narcotic-related crimes is encouraged to call the Humboldt County Drug Task Force at 707-267-9976. The House Committee on Rules will review the rescission proposal, which includes public media funding, on June 10th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. A House floor vote could happen as early as Wednesday. The Senate parliamentarian has ruled that Congress must act on the proposal by July 18th when the 45-day deadline expires. Politico reported that 10 moderate House Republicans currently oppose the bill, signaling that public pressure is having an effect. Over 345,000 emails and 18,000 calls have already been sent to lawmakers in support of public media, but continued advocacy is critical. Targeted outreach is being intensified in key Republican-held districts. Protect My Public Media is a grassroots advocacy campaign dedicated to preserving federal funding for public media stations across the country. Here is what they urge public media listeners to do. Urge audiences to call Congress. Do not fundraise directly around the recession threat. Focus on communicating the community impact of losing federal funding. KMA News will provide further updates when the House vote is officially scheduled. There's a lot of demand for childcare locally, but it's hard to access and expensive, according to a report presented to the Eureka City Council. Daniel Mintz reports.
The Eureka City Council has been briefed on local research detailing the county's unmet childcare need and the impact of childcare costs. The challenges and needs related to accessing and affording childcare were summarized in a June 3rd presentation to the council. Funded through federal American Rescue Plan Act funding, the research project was done by the California Center for Rural Policy. Dr. Nina Desautsens, the center's senior research analyst, described the results of a child care access survey, interviews, and listening sessions, which showed high need for child care and limited availability.
41% of potential child care demand, only 41% is met, based on the numbers of how many children are in Humboldt County 0 to 6 and how many available licensed available spots are there. So it's almost like 59% is unmet need. So there's a huge accessibility gap there. Infant care is especially limited, and especially in more rural areas in southern Humboldt. And 55% of families who were surveyed stated that they wanted non-traditional service hours, hours like weekends, evenings, or more part-time service options. So based on that, we proposed to provide grants and tax incentives to increase the number of licensed facilities and programs, to diversify care options, of course, and to develop employer-sponsored childcare partnerships.
The report says childcare costs account for 43% of median income in the county. The local income impact is significantly greater than the California average of 30%. A series of recommendations on addressing the situation are largely out of the city's realm. Providing grants and tax incentives for licensed childcare facilities, expanding eligibility for childcare financial assistance, increasing wages and benefits, and increasing funding for training and caring for special needs children. Another policy recommendation is to encourage employers to support childcare through flexible work hours, financial support, and to, quote, build or partner with childcare providers. The city of Eureka has done its part with its Little Saplings preschool program for children of city employees, but that's extraordinary. And former Eureka Mayor Susan Seaman, program director for the North Edge consulting firm, said the report's recommendations are mostly directed at state and federal actions.
These changes are not going to happen at the local level, except for with really innovative, wonderful places like City of Eureka, who built their own childcare center. So those types of things are good. Those partnerships are good. But yes, the recommendations are state and federal recommendations. It's really about getting everybody on the same page so that everybody's making the same recommendations, so we have a unified voice.
The report does advise private sector business investment in childcare for employees, which pays for itself through returns such as greater employee recruitment and retention, as noted by Councilmember Renee Contreras-Deloach.
That's the angle, right? I mean, to me, it's demonstrating that this is a tangible benefit and would benefit bottom line. I hate that things have to be measured in that way and not just, hey, this would make your employees' lives better, but that would actually have a tangible financial benefit to the company as well as And I've seen in other, I'd lived in larger cities and I'd seen how some of them would do childcare, you know, facilities on ground floors or other things like that for their employees. And of course, like you said, City of Eureka does this and it makes an incredible difference, I think, for, you know, moms or dads to be able to just go check on their child or, you know, just to have that and know that they're in good care.
The presentation was also made earlier in the day to the county's Board of Supervisors. The county received $4.8 million in American Rescue Plan Act funding for child care assistance and has spent most of it on programs such as grant funding during the pandemic and forgivable loans for transitioning preschool facilities to infant care. The only council action related to the report was to receive and file it. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Turning to Mendocino, supervisors approve painful budget, brace for trouble ahead. KZYX's Elise Cox reports.
After weeks of detailed presentations, frank discussion, and grim fiscal forecasts, the Mendocino County Board of Supervisors has adopted a budget for the upcoming year.
Well, it was a difficult budget, but we made it through it.
That was Board Chair Supervisor John Haschek after the unanimous vote that followed 6 weeks of budget hearings. But the challenges are far from over. County CEO Darcy Antle opened the final hearing with a sobering overview.
I'm going to try and thread this and express my concern for the state of the county as best I can.
She said Mendocino County has likely been running a structural deficit, a long-term imbalance between recurring revenues and expenditures for at least a decade.
You're looking at a deficit going into 26-27 of $16 million. That does not include $8 million in deferred maintenance on your facilities. That does not do anything to the deferred maintenance on your roads. So we, as a county, are struggling mightily, as well as the state and the federal government.
Antle pointed to growing cuts at the state and federal levels that are now cascading through local services.
The state is projecting a $9 to $20 billion deficit.
Nearly half of Mendocino County residents rely on Medi-Cal or Medicaid, and Antle said the clinics that serve them, federally qualified rural health centers, are under increasing pressure.
There's several attacks that have been happening to our most vulnerable individuals. We have these clinics located in Laytonville and in Covelo. And there's some attacks that are happening to them that are imposing new, onerous, expensive reporting processes that will limit the funding that the clinics have to go out for patient needs, such as medical device, nurse managers, behavioral health directors, and chief medical officers. When those clinics are impacted in a federal or state manner, and right now they're under attack at both levels, that individuals will not be able to get basic primary care. And that can be immunizations to our youth, flu and COVID vaccines to our elderly. It also, those clinics are the first stop for high blood pressure, cholesterol, and diabetes.
She also warned of serious reductions in home care services.
Our IHSS providers are going to be limited in the number of hours they can work. They currently can work 66 hours per week. They will be limited to 50. No overtime and no travel.
Public safety is also on the chopping block. The sheriff's office, the largest draw on the general fund, is set to lose roughly $2.7 million in patrol and $1.4 million in jail services. Sheriff Matt Kendall says his department is already stretched thin.
Currently, we're facing some issues in Mendocino County that absolutely demand that we do our jobs. They absolutely demand that we have deputy sheriffs on the streets. I don't know how many of you folks have the public crawling up your back about not enough patrols in various areas when we've got two people on the street for the north, for the coast, and for central on a given day. You split 3,500 miles in between six deputy sheriffs, and usually we're lucky we can have a couple of sergeants on to help at that time. But at this point in time, we are running on the bare bones minimum.
Kendall said he doesn't know how his department will comply with state mandates or how it will staff the soon-to-be-open behavioral health wing of the county jail.
The strategic hiring freeze, I understand that that is important, but we also have to think about the fact that we're going to be opening the Mendocino County, the behavioral health wing in the jail, which is going to cost us about 10 employees. And I don't know where we're going to come up with those if we don't have the money to pay for what we have right now. We have some concerns regarding being able to get these people hired in time. That's very concerning because we've got to get that jail open by a certain date or the state can come back after us for various things. I don't want to play that game. I want to be able to get the job done.
Still, he expressed a determined resignation.
I believe that we can somehow get through this. It's just a question of, we're not going to be whole when we come out the other side. This is one of those fights. Do not walk away thinking that you're not going to be bleeding when you're done, because we will.
Other departments are also sounding alarms. The air quality office is 2 years behind on billing.
Staff is at 3.5 people. We are really stretched for staff help.
Katrina Bartlamay, the assessor, clerk, recorder, and registrar of voters, warned that further cuts could jeopardize ballot printing and mandated training. After listening and taking it all in, supervisors praised the work of department heads. They agreed to use one-time funds to stabilize the budget, for now.
The work for next year's budget has to start tomorrow.
That was Supervisor Madeline Klein calling for the formation of an ad hoc committee to begin long-term planning. The board agreed and appointed Klein and Supervisor Ted Williams to lead the effort. The ad hoc will focus on public safety, strategic funding, and the need for a more sustainable approach. For KZYX News, I'm Elise Cox. For all our local stories, visit kzyx.org.
In state news, immigrant right activists in L.A. rally to protest ICE arrest at court hearings and check-ins. KPFA's Brooke Helena Kirshner reports.
ICE's acting director, Todd Lyons, stood firm against criticism for heavy-handed arrest tactics and the use of masks concealing ICE agents' faces. In a Tuesday news conference, he insisted that masks are necessary to protect the ICE officers' safety. He referred to a poster board of photos of unnamed immigrants as, quote, dangerous criminals who are, he said, terrorizing family, friends, and our neighborhoods. KPFA spoke with Erica Perez, the daughter of Maria Valeriano, an immigrant who was detained Wednesday. Valeriano has lived in the U.S. for 27 years and has three American-born children. At her Wednesday check-in, Valeriano was told that she had exhausted her documentation and would be forced to leave the United States after nearly three decades.
Me and my mom just started crying. I saw my mom so heartbroken. I still can't believe it.
Perez says that her mother, who is diabetic, wasn't given adequate food to take her medicine, was detained in a room where women were forced to sleep on the floor, and was only fed one meal a day.
Those girls get starved to 14 hours. Sometimes she says she didn't get fed till 7 p.m. They were like knocking on the doors, pleading for food. She also mentioned that when they go to the bathroom, there's like a camera that follows them, and they literally pull down their pants and the camera is like literally watching every move they do.
She says her mother is now safe in Tijuana and has plans to travel back to Oaxaca, where she has not lived in nearly 30 years, while her children are forced to live without their mother. John Aponte, an organizer with the Party for Socialism and Liberation, organizer of the Los Angeles rally, urges the public to stay vocal about these arrests.
This is a press conference to get media out here, bring media attention, but also a rally. So we made a call to action for community members, allies, friends, family to come out and to protest these conditions, to protest, you know, what's going on in this country. Again, right? I mean, Maria's story is horrific, but it's unfortunately a very common story, right? We're just seeing more and more of this. So we know that if we don't say something, it's going to continue to happen. So either we let it happen or we say something. And so this is an action to say we're not putting up with this anymore.
I'm Brooke Helena Kirkner, KPFA News.
In national news, House Doge Subcommittee Republicans blast nonprofits as radical slush funds. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
The title of the Doge Subcommittee hearing was Public Funds, Private Agendas, NGOs Gone Wild. NGOs are non-governmental organizations, also known as nonprofits or charitable organizations. To some, they're civil society groups that offer vital services to children, seniors, the hungry, and the homeless. To others, they're taxpayer-funded slush funds advancing radical agendas. Both views were on display at Wednesday's hearing. Georgia Republican Marjorie Taylor Greene is chair of the subcommittee.
We will expose the corrupt ties that bind left-wing NGOs, Democrat elected officials, Democrat political appointees, and the deep state bureaucrats who write grants and contracts. Corrupt backdoor deal making has exploited the taxpayer purse to achieve policy ends opposed by the very Americans forced to fund them.
Green, like others on the subcommittee, said the issue should not be partisan. But of course, it was very partisan. Melanie Stansbury of New Mexico was the ranking Democrat on the committee. She noted that Elon Musk, the man behind Doge, has never appeared before the Doge subcommittee.
Here we are. I feel like we should play a breakup song in the midst of the breakup of the GOP with Elon Musk and Doge, and yet still the zombie lurches on.
She criticized the Republicans' choice of witnesses for the hearing.
All of which participants in organizations that were involved in Project 2025 that are funded through the same dark money networks and organizations of the Koch brothers and Leonard Leo and the Searles and the Mercers who fund all this stuff, Project 2025, the stuff that's happening in front of the Supreme Court, rolling back our rights, that helped to get, you know, over 70 Project 2025 authors placed in the administration acting in high-level roles right now that are bringing cases in front of the Supreme Court, undermining our democracy, and which are attacking organizations who are working on civil society programs.
The Republican majority called three witnesses. Scott Walter is president of the Capital Research Center.
Far too many NGOs are really BGOs, basically government organizations, for two reasons. First, they get most of their money from government, not citizens. Second, they serve the big government political agenda that fights to centralize power in Washington for the benefit of the left's preferred political party.
Green's hearing was mostly focused on two issues, immigration and green energy. Witness Daniel Turner of the group Power of the Future blasted funding that went to nonprofits to address climate change. Mark Krikorian, the director of the Center for Immigration Studies, was introduced as an expert on immigration and border security. He says NGOs, along with the United Nations, are helping undocumented immigrants to breach the U.S. border.
NGOs and U.N. agencies were paid by U.S. taxpayers to facilitate the illegal movement of migrants through South and Central America and Mexico.
The minority Democrats on the committee had one witness, Diane Yentl, head of the National Council of Nonprofits. She says nonprofits are being mischaracterized and vilified.
The administration's targeting of organizations and institutions with which it disagrees is a fundamentally un-American action and something that should concern us all. These actions aren't about government efficiency or about reform. They are attempted censorship disguised as accountability. This is weaponization of the federal government to chill dissent, and it is wrong, whatever party is in control.
Democrat Ayanna Pressley of Massachusetts spoke in support of nonprofits and against attacks on them. She mentioned one example in her district, the administration's attacks on Harvard University. She says the real issue is not governance, but rather the many forms of assault on nonprofits.
This is about Trump and Republicans punishing people who disagree with them. It is about attacking nonprofits of all sizes that serve the vulnerable and marginalized and stand in the gap for our communities. It's about trying to intimidate every charity and nonprofit in this country and spark a fear that if you speak up, if you do something the Republicans don't like, you could be next.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Javier Rodriguez, and our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Elise Cox, Brooke Helena Kirshner, and Christopher Martinez. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on kmud.org, and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan.